हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Pages. Oh, okay, this is something else. Okay, so then here we're discussing Ishopanishad. So Prabhupada is saying, the bottom of 20, the instructions of Sri Ishopanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called Gita Upanishad, the cream of all the Upanishads. In Bhagavad Gita 3:9-16, the personality of Godhead says that one cannot attain the state of Naishkarmya or Akarma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva Krishna, it is to be understood he has attained the stage of positive knowledge. In this purified stage, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, cannot act, and he is able to work on the basis of Naishkarmya. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death, Ishopanishad Mantra 2 purport. The four concluding mantras of Ishopanishad describe the conditioned soul as covered by the lower modes of material nature, apihitam. The self can be uplifted and restored in its original position only by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The statement from the mantra 16, Yo sa vasau purusha so hamasmi, is taken by Shankara to mean that the individual soul and Brahman are one and the same. However, according to Ramanuja, here I does not mean only the individual soul, but the super soul in it as well. And Purusha refers to the Supreme Person, as indicated in the Purusha Shukta from Rig Veda. Consequently, the text implies that the Paramatma in me is the same as the Paramatma situated everywhere else in the universe. Madhva reads the verse in the same way. The Purusha who is present in all the demigods is present in me as the Lord. The God present in all is all these is one. According to Vaishnavacharyas, the word Agni in the concluding hymn refers to the Paramatma. Only Paramatma can eradicate the impediments in the form of sins and take the devotee to his supreme abode, which is the final goal of the spiritual practice. Vedanta Deshika points out that the last mantra of Ishopanishad demand full surrender of the soul to the supersoul, Sharanagati. Srila Prabhupada comments on this mantra is in the same spirit. Quote, By surrendering to the Lord and praying for His causeless mercy, the devotee can progress on the path of complete self-realization. The Lord is addressed as fire because He can burn anything into ashes, including the sins of the surrendered soul. Ishupanishad 8, Mantra 18, Purport. So this element of that, the performance of the prescribed duties, is only through action where we come to the platform of Naishkarmya. The impersonalists have an idea that by intellect alone, by knowledge alone, by intelligence alone, I will come to the platform of Naishkarmya. But that doesn't make sense, because karma, karmya indicates that it's action. So what you're trying to attain is inaction in action. Right? But their solution is action in inaction. They don't act, but still they have maintained material desire. So it doesn't work. So this concept that Naishkarmya means it's going to be a very intellectual process is not the fact. It means there's an understanding. Otherwise, how is it that you will take up the process unless you understand Krishna is the Lord, we're a servant, right? But as a servant, we're going to act, right? So that's going to be karma. But because this karma is not being done for our own purpose, right? It's not affected by the modes. Therefore, it gives no material reaction, right? So therefore, even though it's karma, the effect is nishkam karma, right? So this Naishkarmya is used, then means that you've accepted the authority of the Lord. Having accepted that, then it works. So that means performing your duties according to scripture. So whether that's on the Bhagavat, Pancharatrika, or Vedic platform, it doesn't matter, because the Vedas describe all three. But you can't be acting in one of those platforms and not following the Shastra. Right? In other words, we can't be chanting the holy name and not doing it according to scripture. We can't be performing deity worship and it's not according to scripture. We can't be living our our day-to-day lifestyle outside of the deity worship and the holy name or the preaching and it not be according to the Vedic literatures. Does that make sense? So it has to be according to that. Then that is a platform which Naishkarmya comes. Right? The Bhagavad Gita is the lesson to be learned is Naishkarmya. And then in that, Krishna always says the first thing is perform your prescribed duties. Right? So austerity means that's the first principle, is austerity. That's proper performance of prescribed duties. So it's the proper performance is there, so then we have two aspects of proper. Right? We've always discussed that in action, there's always two aspects. Anyone remembers these two aspects? Right? Shaunaka Rishi to Yudhishthir Maharaj. Yes. Yes, attitude and the endeavor. So, in other words, when you say perform your prescribed duties, that means, one, it's your duty to perform whatever it is that's appropriate for you and your situation in Varna and Ashram. That you perform. But other than that is the mentality that is necessary. That is your prescribed duty. In other words, as a devotee, we have a prescribed mentality. Right? A karmi, he has his prescribed mentality. A jnani has his, but the devotee has theirs. So now they may be performing the same activity, so it looks like the same prescribed duty, but it's different because the attitude is different, because the gross always comes from the subtle. So the devotee, like Prabhupada gives the example, the devotee is going to the market for Krishna. He is cooking for Krishna. But it looks exactly the same. He's going to go buy the same vegetables, you know, fight with the sabjiwala over the price. You know, he's going to, you know, buy the same good quality of vegetables. Right? He's going to go home, use the same method. He's going to have a fire. He's going to have a pot. There's going to be spoons. He's going to cut up the vegetable. He's going to use spices. It looks exactly the same. So how do you tell the difference? It's in the attitude. So bhakti, the most important element is the attitude. Right? So then here is that prescribed duties then means both the activities and the attitude. So many times people get stuck on the activities. They do it without the proper attitude, but they're doing the duties. Others seeing what's the importance of the duties, throw out the duties, and still don't do the attitude. Right? or have attitude, one or the other. But these days, even they don't have attitude. They don't have enough, personal confidence and potency to have attitude, right? So then, how do you say? Yeah, so then both of them, this is like what Rupa Goswami's talking about in Niyamagraha, right? Is that one throws out the rules because they don't understand its meaning, so they'll neither follow the Veda nor have the attitude, right, right mood. The other one then follows the rule, follows the Shastra, but still doesn't have the right mood. So the common point between both of them, one is, of course, the dealing with the rule. One follows it, one throws it out. But the most common thing, where they're exactly the same, is they both don't have the right attitude. So that's the whole point. Sometimes we see this contradiction, but underlying the attitude's the same. So in the Shastra, when it's talking about the Lord, it may talk about Him as Ishwara, it may talk about Him as, Brahman, it may talk about Him as Agni, but the underlying point is, the common is, Himself as the personality of Godhead. His attitude, He's Godhead. What form He is taking, that may be different. But He's still the same Godhead. Right? So in the same way is that when we do things, we have to be able to distinguish this as the attitude. So therefore you have two parties, the right party and the left party. But the attitude is the same. They're both just as narrow-minded and both don't understand what it is they're doing. Right? They follow rules, don't follow rules. They don't understand what's actually going on. So they cannot connect it to Krishna. So therefore, Niyamagraha is thrown out in that you properly follow the rules, but the most important thing in this is prescribed duties means the mentality also. The mentality comes with the rule, like that. So much of the time, if we don't know the attitude, if we follow the rule, it doesn't seem to give us a nice result. That's because the mood isn't right. Does that make sense? So people who followed rules didn't get a good result. Generally, it's because of the attitude. Like that. You change the attitude, then it starts to work. Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah. So then here, that then ends this the introduction. Like that. So we've discussed in here that the whole concept of, or the basis of this, that there should be knowledge is a basis. Because otherwise there's this idea that it'll only be the activity itself, right? Does that make sense? It's just that you should, don't talk all this philosophy, you just, shut up and do your service, right? That's the way it is, right? It's even, does that make sense? Right? So, the idea is that, no, the bhakti is based on knowledge. Some will say, no, it's rasa is the most important thing, we're not worried about this knowledge. Others will say, this knowledge, oh, it's gyan, we're not gyanis. So then, the bottom line is just do service. And what is this service? Then it will be, whatever it is that's generally one is told to do. But unfortunately, it doesn't cover the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. This Hari Bol Prabhu, that's kind of like, even though it's unspoken, it's kind of like the ladies' area. Yes, that knowledge will be thrown out because devotion is seen as more important, or knowledge will be thrown out because it's seen, well, that's jnanis. Right? At the same time is that then activity, if it's not exactly like temple service, that will be thrown out because then that's karma. It's like the karmis. So there's a problem here. And the only thing that can actually hold all this together is the knowledge coming from Scripture. Right, then you actually understand who you are, God, and the situation. So any activity with the proper understanding can be connected to Krishna in devotion. Right? So it holds it together, right? Just like the knowledge of a chinta beta beta tattva, right? Because this will be considered knowledge, is tattva. That holds together all the other Vaishnava understandings of God consciousness. Because everybody has some aspect of it, right? The pureness of the oneness between the purpose of the Lord and the devotees. Or the specialness of the oneness because the Lord and his energies are there. And how those energies act. Or that the Lord and the Jiva are eternally separate beings. Right? Or there's a separateness, but at the same time there's a commonality. Right? You know, gold in the gold mine. So all these are correct, but they find their perfection when they're all combined together and seen from one perspective as Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. So that basis is knowledge. On that, then that knowledge can be applied, having with that Sambandha Gyan, then you can move to Abhideya. Right? So that's what's being discussed, right, in the afternoon. So that Abhideya is based on that Sambandha. So that's what Prabhupada is then pointing out in the beginning, is that in this Vairagya Vidya, it's the knowledge that's the basis. Right? Books are the basis. Right? Then from that, then everything happens. Right? Those books are studied, those books are practiced, those books are distributed. You know? So it's always about that aspect. It's not something else that's important. Right? Everything else is in line with this. So then that this establishes that the importance of the study of the scriptures. Otherwise some may think, you know, it's a waste of time. That shouldn't be something that's being done. You know, you could be doing so much more valuable service, right? But then the point is if that's the case, then if we really believed in that, why would we then have things like, you know, family life and, you know, other aspects that would take us away from full-time temple service 24/7? Why would we sleep? Why would we? Well, eating, we can kind of accept that, okay, honoring prasad like that, but then we can honor prasad like Raghunath Das, you know, like that. You know, every other day we take just a little palmful of, you know, buttermilk or charinamrita, you know, like that. You know, some temples you might survive that way. I've seen devotees there. I forget what it was. Maybe it was Los Angeles because they were like the most opulent, you know, temples. That I think also New York. You go charinamrita. Charinamrita is like a half-hour-long ritual, you know, and there's only like 15 people in the line because you're supposed to take 3 drops. So the charinamrita is mixed with yogurt. Prabhupada mixes it with a little yogurt and sugar. So here they mix it with like shrikant. You know, and then they have very big spoons. So then you take 3 drops. So literally a drop is, you know, a ball that big of charinamrita, which is more like, you know, like that. So 3 of those, you know, then, you know, each one eats his 3, you know, balls of charinamrita. Then the next one like that. So like that, you might actually be able to get by on Raghunath Das's, you know, his diet there. You know. Okay, so, but, so it's inconsistent there. Why? Because the whole philosophy is not being applied, right? Just as these other aspects, these other philosophies, though they're perfect, right? What is given by the Vaishnavacharyas is perfect, but there's further perfection, more perfection that can be attained through understanding Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. So in the same way is that these attitude of just serve, don't worry about anything else, just surrender and serve, right? Then that's how you say? That element is correct. But at the same time as there's more deeper understanding, more perfection that be gained by understanding what you're doing in that process. What does it mean to surrender? What does it mean to serve? Right? That makes sense? So that basis then is then, you know, means, you know, in pursuance of that, then this course has been developed like that. So now we'll start with the Ishopanishad. So in the Ishopanishad, we have the invocation. That means it's been divided up into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The invocation is always separate. Then you have mantras 1 to 3. Yeah, it means invocation, the Lord and his energies are perfect and complete. So this then establishes the Lord, establishes his energies, and establishes their non-dualness, right? The perfection of both. Mantras 1 to 3, Ishvashya principle, he's the Lord, the Supreme Lord. and how he's in control of everything. How he means that has to be established. Then, 4-5, the inconceivable characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mantra 6, the Mahabhagavat's vision. Mantras 9-14, different grades of non-devotees. And 15-18, the devotee's prayer. So, having gone through the other books, I mean, that we're going through the Shikshamrita, do we notice anything in this that is similar? Do we see? It's the same knowledge. It's just the Upanishadic formula, it has a certain kind of presentation and philosophy, I mean, poetry. Well, generally in prose form, then you can be, you know, bring everything together and make it more clear. But otherwise you have the Lord, the Lord's energies, then the position of the great souls, right? So that would cover the nature of the living entity, and those who are eternally liberated, right? Then the different grades of non-devotees, then those who are not devotees, right? So now you've covered with these, the Lord and His energies are perfect and complete. You've already covered the Lord as the Supreme, the Lord of energies, you know, and His rasas, because it's the Lord and His energies, so it indicates the interaction. Then the nature of the jivas, right? And then we get down to the devotee's prayer, right? So that would cover your devotional activities and your prayojana. You understand? It's very interesting. Last night I was hearing the boys were reading the translation of Taittiriya Upanishad that they're studying. And in it, having studied the Shikshamrita, then you could understand that whatever was being said there in Upanishadic language was exactly the same. Because the Shikshamrita it's always quoting the Upanishads. You could see is that it's exactly the same. What we know as our philosophy, when it's presented in its technical form, that is Upanishad. Right? It is Vedanta. Though we sometimes think it's something very different and ununderstandable, it's what we commonly deal in. It's our natural mode of expression of the philosophy. So but they just use very, very a special kind of poetic language that is more kind of like mystical and hidden. So it is a draw for a broader range of persons who may not be so interested even in devotional service. But that devotional service is there. That relationship, that understanding how Krishna is in everything. Right? You know. Like in the Upanishad is saying, may all nice things come to me, right? And may, you were reading it. May all nice things come to me, and but at the same time he reverses that, may about the Lord being involved in it or something. I don't remember. But basically what they were saying was, may I get all material facilities, then may I be able to see the Lord in all that facilities. Because what's he going to do with the material facilities? Right? What are you going to do with it? You're going to use it in the Lord's service, right? Because when we say, well, why would he want material facility? So when you go down to Nimai's shop, you buy spiritual potatoes? Right? You order from Navadvip, you know, spiritual odamos? You understand? So whatever you have in your possession technically is made out of material energy. What makes the difference between material and spiritual is how you use it. So he's asking that whatever is required for me to perform my service according to my position, right, may that all be there and may I be able to see the Lord in all of it. Right? But the words they use aren't as clear as that. They will say it in such a way that the karmi will get something from it, the jnani will get something from it, and the devotee will get something. Like that. That's basically the difference. So now we'll see here our own first hand. Okay, so mentions here, just overview. Sambandha is in mantras 4, 5, 8, and 14. Abhideya 1 through 3, 9, 11, 15 through 18. And Prayojana 6, 7, 10, 12, and 13. Introduction. In his introduction, Srila Prabhupada establishes the Vedas as an absolute authority regarding all spiritual and material matters. His divine grace ascertains three kinds of evidences, pramanas, accepted by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, namely pratyaksha, sense perception, anuman, reasoning, and shabda, submissive hearing from genuine spiritual authority. Pratyaksha and Anuman are imperfect, since our senses and minds are prone to commit mistakes and to be an illusion. Shabda is faultless because it is coming down from a perfect source. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is bona fide representative, the spiritual master. The Vedas are spiritual sound vibrations, sabda praman, and therefore they are the only way for the conditioned soul to understand what exists beyond his limited realm of material perception and reasoning. Srila Prabhupada writes, quote, "Transcendental knowledge is knowledge from beyond this universe. Within this universe is material knowledge, and beyond this universe is transcendental knowledge. There is a spiritual sky, there is another nature, which is beyond manifestation and non-manifestation. But how will you know that there is a sky where the planets and inhabitants are eternal? All this knowledge is there, but how you make experiments? It is not possible. Therefore, you have to take the assistance of the Vedas. This is called Vedic knowledge," Sri Upanishad. Right? So you have the material world, you can't experiment with it and find out the spiritual world. Right? It won't work. It's a different substance. So the only way to find out is by hearing from authority. That's the point. Then pratyaksha and anuman are useful. We accept pratyaksha and anuman, but in connection with praman. Based on the praman, right, or the shabda praman, then one can try to apply that practically, that you see it with your senses, or it can be understood through its, you know, how you say, its closeness to it. It's, you know, alluding to. It's very subtle. You can see it there, but maybe its form is not as clearly manifest. So that's the idea. If you actually understand the philosophy, you can see it. That's Shastra Chakshus, seeing through the eyes of Shastra. So that means it comes to pratyaksha, but it doesn't start with pratyaksha. If it starts with pratyaksha, it will be a problem. Now, if you see something, then you contemplate it, bring it to the philosophy, then it works. But unless it's connected, it won't actually give you the result you want. You can't get. So that's why then authority is so important. And the nice thing about it is whatever is important to a human being is in the Vedas. There's nothing that's left out. I mean, we hear dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Is there something more a human being needs? Right? Religion, right? You know, in other words, social structure, emotional interaction, prescribed duties, ways in which to interact with each other and depend upon each other, economics, morality, justice, sense gratification, freedom from the misery of material existence. Is there something left out? Right? No. So everything's there. That means whatever's there in your life, it is covered by the Vedas. One doesn't have to go elsewhere. Right? Just as for the child, everything they need is personified by the mother. So in the same way, everything we need is found in the Vedas, because the Veda is mother. So there's no need of going somewhere else. So it's very important that the Shastra is the understanding. Then you can take pratyaksha and make some sense. Right? Means you start with some outside body of knowledge. You may learn some elements of it, but you will never really understand it. Right? We can take the same body of knowledge and we can explain it so it's more understandable, both in practicality and in philosophy. Does that make sense? Because we have that same knowledge. Right? We have the same knowledge. But our knowledge is then connected to Krishna. Okay? So continue. So how will this work? How is this, what's the process now?
We just go to the
all this here.
Yeah.
And then what about they doing some essays on this or something? Or there's writing on this? You have something. And when do they come in? You're establishing that. So basically we're going through this. That means up to now we should have been paying attention. There'll be something on that. But now is the main study. So now you really got to pay attention. In other words, after this you're going to be responsible to be able to
show that you actually understood what has been, you know, pontificated here for the last so many months, right? So it means we're going through so you understand what to look for in your studies. Then you'll be reading the books, right? Up to now we've just been listening. But from now, then we'll be reading. Actually, the Ishopanishad will be something that needs to be read, right? And then there'll be some essays on it, like that. But it'll be, how you say, more, how you say, the process will be easier than it was with the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam should be after studying all this, then that becomes easy. If you start with the Bhagavatam, it's a little more difficult. So here, then, it will be something that will not be a problem for everyone to keep up. So no one should get worried. Invocation. The Lord and His energies are perfect and complete. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete in two ways. One, He is the complete absolute truth, Bhagavan, Satchidananda Vigraha. Quote, the realization of impersonal Brahman, or a Paramatma, the Supersoul, is incomplete realization of the absolute complete. Realization of impersonal Brahman is realization of a Sat feature, or of His aspect of eternity. And Paramatma realization is realization of His Sat and Chit features, His aspects of eternity and knowledge. But realization of the Personality of Godhead is realization of all the transcendental features, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, bliss. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects of the Absolute Truth in their completeness. Sri Ishopanishad Invocation Purport. Two, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the context of Srila Prabhupada's purport, this refers to the material creation and the living entities, are also perfect and complete. The universe has all facilities to function properly, and therefore, quote, no other unit in the universe need make an extraneous effort to try to maintain the universe. All facilities are given to the living beings as well, so they can realize the complete whole. The human form is a complete manifestation of the consciousness of the living being, and thus enables him to achieve the ultimate perfection of life. In other words, what consciousness is there in the living entity, you have it in the human form. Whether you take full advantage of it and bring it to completeness, you know, in other words, connected properly with Krishna, that's the individual's choice. Right? But the consciousness is there. You have the consciousness now that can be cultivated to bring yourself to the transcendental platform or to the platform of love of God. It's not something different. It is that is the consciousness. The animals don't have that consciousness. They can only be aware of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's it. That's all the more they can do. But in the human form of life, then the jiva is given back his natural consciousness. Now it's just a matter of using it. Does that make sense? Right? Krishna's a person, you're a person. We just have to recognize that and decide, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take up this process. And I'm going to become Krishna's pure devotee. Right? We have to have that interest, that determination. As we notice that it's meant, the process works is that when we have that determination, then the eternal potency gives you strength. In that position, then you move forward. Right? But if we don't make that determination, then we will be distracted by the material energy. Right? If you think about it in one's life, that day-to-day activities, one may be going along, and if it becomes very habitual, you get distracted by them, you're not necessarily thinking about Krishna, you're just going through a habit. Then something comes up, some reason or another, what it is, association of devotees, some kirtan, you know, some, how do you say, epiphanistic situation, then you get some realization, and then you think, wow, I haven't been so absorbed in Krishna. Right? So, therefore, you weren't moving forward, not in that activity. Then, having understood that, now one is more determined and one is moving forward. Does that make sense? So this is something common in our lives. So then, that is the same principle, is that the jiva always is in the middle. He's always, until he becomes situated on the transcendental platform, he's always situated as marginal. So that means even you're in Krishna consciousness, you can still see Maya and Krishna. So if you take Krishna, or determine that that's the direction,
the internal potency will give you that strength that you'll start to try to make that endeavor to see him everywhere. But if you don't, then by default, automatically, Maya catches the attention. We just get involved. It doesn't mean that we're totally an illusion, we're separate from Krishna consciousness. No, it means within our Krishna consciousness, we're not so focused. Right? And so we're distracted by Maya. The same principle, the same marginal nature is manifesting. So if we have that determination, then those same habitual activities can be made seen in light of Krishna consciousness. You don't have to change the activities. You simply have to change the mentality, right, as we discussed before. That's what actually makes the difference between devotional and non-devotional. It's not the change in activity, the change in the consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So is pointing out that Krishna is complete, so Satchitananda, so as Bhagavan is complete, these other realizations aren't complete. So when you understand Bhagavan, it includes the other two, then it's complete. Right? His energies are complete because the jiva is complete. In his consciousness, he can understand the complete whole, right? His relationship, everything. The material energy is complete. It functions nicely on its own. You don't have to add anything to it to make it work. Right? Like that. So it's going on. So everything is actually going, is complete. The human life has value only if dovetailed with the complete whole. If disengaged from the service of the supreme whole, the living entities cannot be happy. Because then it's your complete consciousness is not engaged with the complete whole. That makes it complete. Otherwise, the marginal position, then one is not engaged with the complete whole. It means we're taking Brahman and Paramatma to not be complete, let alone mundane consciousness. Right? The mundane understanding is very incomplete. Right? It appears that way, it's complete, because it's a reflection of the complete, concept of Rasa in the spiritual world. So it has that idea, it looks like it could be complete and could give us satisfaction. But it can't because it's a reflection, yes.
So by determination, we can, even though externally and by our conditioned nature, we might not be out of the marginal, but by endeavor and determination, we make that shift consciously, we move out of the marginal.
Yes.
And then this keeps us going in the right direction.
Yes. The example is given because it says you get strength. The example then is given in the story of the sparrow. You know, going to dry up the ocean. It's not possible, right? The jiva is so small, there's no way, technically, it can overcome the material energy. But then, because the internal potency helps, gives that strength, one is able to. Right? Yes?
For that, the knowledge is needed.
For that, knowledge is needed. Right? Because you have to know there's a difference between myself and this material energy. Otherwise, that's what we were discussing before, kshetra, kshetra, gya. It's when you think you're the kshetra, part of the field, right? Okay, there's me, there's the family, there's the house, there's my money, there's this, that. You're just one of the aspects of the field. You think I'm the controller of this, but you're technically not. You're just one of the parts of the field. You may be a very instrumental part in making it work, but you're still not the one actually controlling it. Only when one is kshetra gya, then one technically is actually in control of the field. Because then you're not identifying with it, but you are working with it. If you identify with it, you're caught up in it. Right? Can't see the forest for the trees. But if you step back, you can see the forest, you can see the trees, you can see everything. But that only works if you understand that on the other side, sitting next to you, then there's the supreme kshetra gya. Right, so he knows all fields, so therefore our field is connected to him. Then it works very nicely. It's a simple thing, but that's the basis of what we're trying to do, that knowledge. Right? Then we can understand that everything's complete, it works perfectly, we just have to actually take it up properly. So the mundane consciousness, mundane world is perfect, it will be here forever. Therefore we're given the term Nityabhada. We've been here forever, because it's perfectly complete, we'll be here forever. But because that's not the natural position, then taking up our natural position is also perfectly complete, because taking that up, one will be nitya siddha. eternally situated there. It's just a matter of accepting that. Is that okay? The perfection of the Lord, as additionally understood as the perfectness of his avatars, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his commentary on the invocation mantra. The perfect avatari and the perfect avatar are complete, endowed with all energies. From the perfect avatari appears the perfect avatars for the purpose of spreading the pastimes of the Lord. When the perfect avatari accepts the perfect form for accomplishing certain pastimes, he is still present, but in a covered form. In no circumstance is there a diminution of the perfection of the Supreme Lord. Right? What would that be referring to? Yes, so that aspect is there, but now here accepts, he's alluding to something. This is Anuman. He's saying it, but the words he's using is indicated. He's not saying it directly. Right? Because he's talking, notice here he's talking avatar, avatari. Like that. So his last point is that of the avatari. Right? So avatari means he who is the source of all avatars. Right? So all the expansions of the Lord are coming from the original Lord. So that means it comes from Krishna. Right? Krishna is avatari. Then, but here he's saying that this Lord comes, this avatari, he comes to fulfill or accomplish certain pastimes, but he comes in a covered form. Yes, Lord Chaitanya. Because he is avatari. So then, but that doesn't mean he becomes anything less, right? So God's always perfect. We always have to, means we're always just having to convince ourselves on all different points. Okay, this point's right, but what about this one next to it, you know? So like that, we divide up, what all these few simple points into like hair-splitting things because we have doubts on all of them, right? Therefore, we have hair-splitting philosophy to address all our little hair-splitting doubts about us not being God, and not being the controller and enjoyer of the material energy, right? Like that. So that's why it's there. That's why the technicality is there. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Mantras 1 through 3. Almost done. The Ishavasya principle. Okay. The Ishavasya principle. Mantra 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead owns, controls, and pervades both the cosmic creation and the living beings. Knowing this, one should not claim false proprietorship over anything and should accept only his allotted quota. Right? So this also goes with the principle, because we're saying here is that before is that Naishkarmya means, because the Upanishads will be preaching Naishkarmya. Right? They're always on the taking the path of Nivritti. So Naishkarmya will be the performance of your prescribed duty, but not with the desire for the result. Right? So here is that, then that basis is on your prescribed duty. So prescribed duties means what is your quota, right? What is prescribed? Right? Just like you have a prescription for taking medicine. It's a certain kind of medicine and a certain amount and a certain timings, diet, everything goes along with it. So in the same way as your allotted quota then goes with your prescribed duty. So that is yours. No one can say it's not. At the same time as you can't take what's beyond that, what someone else's. Right? So this balance. So that's where one starts. Then one is able to engage properly in devotional service. Right? Because one's service then becomes based on Shastra. It's you have your quota, you have these things, no one can complain. Does that make sense? Yes.
And then, so being of whatever is coming to you, then accepting it your allotted quota by seeing how to respond, how you would respond according to how Krishna expects you to respond, not speculating or lamenting, then, sorry, I've said it in a
moment. No, it's fine. Just keep going.
Then that way you always remain adhering to this
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not trying to speculate what if, or you don't endeavoring too much to get something, where you're just dealing with what situation Krishna is putting you in. And then in order to know how to respond adequately to in a way that Krishna will be pleased, you just take instruction from Guru Shadrachana.
Yes. Means in other words, it's like the element, because we're dealing with karma here, right? So naish karma means you're dealing with karma, but what you're trying to do is deal with karma, but you're dealing with it in such a way you don't create future karma, right? The process is you perform an action today, tomorrow you'll get the result of that, right? So depending upon what you do in that situation is what is going to be your next result, right? So you're always going from action to result. Here it is, you're put in situations that are there from your past activities, right? Then what you do in that determines whether there'll be a future result or not. So if it's not Krishna conscious, there will be a future result. If it's being done for Krishna, then there is no future result, right? Or if it's partial, you know, a little bit of both, you get mixed. You get some future result that's material. Same time you will get the spiritual, however much was spiritual. So then the prescribed duty then is the situation you're put in. And then now what do you do in that? Right? So it's based on Shastra, but that doesn't mean you don't think, right? You have to think because you have to apply it to time, place, and circumstance. It has to actually work for you. It has to be practical. But it can't be outside of Shastra. So one may say, well, that's difficult, but that's what human life means. Right? Animal life is easy. You see something that is within your scope of, you know, how you say, food, you eat it. Right? You're tired, you lay down and sleep. You know, it's very simple. Like that. Human life means it's complex. It means it's got all these contradictory elements. That's what makes it special, is how to work it out. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's always that element, is how to, in any particular situation, how to make this philosophy practical in this situation. Right? So that may take a lot of thinking, a lot of practice. You may have an idea, you make the endeavor, it moves forward, then sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does. So you're constantly having to readdress, because it's not that I did it once and sit back. That's not Krishna consciousness. It's not, life. Life is you're dealing with the moment now. So it doesn't mean yesterday I was good at chanting, so today I'm automatically. No, today you make the same endeavor. Because whatever it is, it can always go farther. Right? Radharani, she's a good cook, so she doesn't just sit back. Every day she's making endeavor to make something special. Right? So eternally this process goes on. So eternally the process of trying to apply the philosophy into your life right now that perfectly matches is always going on. So you can never sit back and say, I've done it, because done it means past. It doesn't mean present. Krishna consciousness is in the present. Does that make sense? So that's the element, is that constant activity that one has to be done. But to do that, you must know, you know, whose field it is and whose results are gained from that field by operating it. Otherwise, if we think it should be mine and it's not, I won't act. Right? So we have to understand it's not ours, but we're still going to act. Because if it's going to be for God, right, the result is for God, means I have to act without desiring the result. Right? If I want it for myself, then I will act for myself. Right? That would be the natural, mundane inspiration. But, so you still have to understand who's the field and what the result is, how that process works. But now we're doing it without designing that result. Right? So that gets you your nice karma. Is that okay? Like that. Were you supposed to ask the question at the beginning of the class? Yeah. The problem is you have a knack of when the time is right. That's when it ends. So you can set your watch. It's 8:10 every time he raises his hand. So can you do one thing? Is on Thursday, raise your hand first, and then we'll continue. Yeah? Not sure. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada Hare Ki. But still, you can stop and ask the question at the beginning of the class. Just when you start the class, just raise your hand. Yeah, but you had a question related to the last time which we started to discuss. Oh, okay.
The thing is you're driving your car. You can be driving the car, you know, just to get to the temple for the artsik, and so you drive nicely. Or you can be driving the car because you think, you know, you're what do you call this? What's his name? You know, what is it? Schumacher or something. Right? So, but will the driving change? It's still the same car, same steering wheel, same pedals, same gearshift. All the changes in the consciousness. Because the consciousness changes, therefore now you drive a little bit more nicely. But when you think you're, you know, too much, then you're being a little bit more careful. It may help, but then if you want to start riding a bicycle, then if that's what you need to do to get rid of the attacks of the cars, then go for it.